Comrades and friends, hello. I feel like it's all been eventful and we haven't even, I guess we started. We're in the shadow of Rockford Tower. We're behind enemy lines. We're in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. This is Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. A little solemn night. We have just returned from the NACPA vigil. And I felt good about it. And we're going to talk a little bit about it and then talk about other matters with our friend Medina. Hello.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
Could be better. Could be worse. I'm alive.
Yeah. Well, that's good. What was your... How'd you feel about the vigil tonight? So, Mike, you know, Delawareans for Palestinian Human Rights, our friend Mike Abel, put on a program we talked about a couple weeks ago. Or last week, maybe it was. And, yeah, we just came back from it, and it was, yeah, it was a group, little group grieving. You spoke, very, eloquently at the end. Everybody, who spoke, was actually very good, I thought. I was kind of in the mood for that, so.
You weren't in a critical mood?
What's that?
You weren't in a critical mood?
Well, to be honest with you, my medical issues have been sort of starting to get to me, like frustrate me, you know, and just like make my day fucking annoying. And just other stuff has just been like, I've been fucking up. I don't even want to say fucking up. I've been like getting in starting little battles, like good battles to me,
okay,
like at work and stuff. I don't know. I've just been like in a mood. And so I really was like interested to just sit and listen to what people had to say.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think when you're in a mood, if you're able to be mindful about that and actually sit and listen and not just like lash out from frustration, I think that shows maturity, honestly, because I feel like a lot of times I realize that after the fact and I'm like, oh, like I had that argument because I was in a bad mood about something else. Wish I had like been perceptive in the moment and not, you know, immature. So shout out to you for doing that. I agree with you. I think everybody was really well spoken. I was moved to tears two or three times at least, from people sharing like personal testimony and like personal family stories of the NACPA, which is like the catastrophe in 1948 when Palestinians were forced out and killed. And I've heard a lot of stories over the years, but something about today was different. And a friend that I met through organizing the past few months, Dr. F. Nan, shared a poem that she wrote, and it was like really powerful, really well written, really moving. And I was just grateful that I got to hear her story.
Yeah, it was super. You introduced us before it started, and she mentioned like, "Hey, you know, I did write this, and I'm kind of nervous about it, you know, whatever." And people say that. I say that when I write stuff. And when she delivered it, it was really, it was really powerful.
I mean, I would say award-winning level poetry.
Well, between like I looked at, I wonder how it reads looking at it, because I just kept thinking I hope like there were people there who do publish this stuff. I publish some stuff too. It needs to be somewhere and kind of like I'd like to see how it looks because it was extremely powerful.
Yeah,
she interwove basically stories from her family. That sort of piece together this idea that this is generational catastrophe.
Yeah.
It's generational trauma, right? The theme of it was that the Nakba never ended, because it hasn't. But the way that the story is told by her through the generations of her family,
yeah,
I think was just really moving.
Yeah, I agree. And I was in the back of the crowd with a friend who was there with her husband and her daughter, who I think is three, but she whispered it when someone asked how old she was. So I think she said three. And I just started crying, and I was like, oh, no, like, I hope I don't, like, freak out this little girl and have her, like, question why are you sad and all that. And she just, honestly, her presence kept, like, lifting me up because, you know, you're, like, crying and it's so heavy, everything that you're hearing and what people are talking about. And then you look down at this three-year-old and she's like, can I hold your candle? And her eyes were just so bright and her face was so cute and she just was, like, full of joy. And I was like, yep, this is why we're doing this. Yeah. You know, so.
Even, I mean, right out of the blocks, I was already, you know, in the mindset I was in. And, of course, I know Dr. Czar. And, you know, George gets up there and he's like a gregarious guy. He's like a professional guy. I've talked to him, you know, we've had him on and all that stuff. And he comes up and he sort of says hello to everyone in his regular way. And then he says he's going to tell his story. And he said, really, I need to think about my parents. And he just started,
crying immediately. Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to handle this. Like, yeah. I'm turning to Susan. Like, I'm actually starting to tear up right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm like.
Something about when people can't find words is, like, the most powerful moment.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, you know, he told the story over Zoom to me a week and a half ago or whatever. But something about standing in front of all those people and saying, I have to think about my parents. Like, what was he thinking?
Yeah.
Like, I can't even. It was so profound, I couldn't even really deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to Dr. Fanan when he walked up. And we were, like, you know, talking about how awesome he is. And she was like, you know, he's older than the state of Israel. And I was like, true. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, glad we went. We ended the way we end all events, which is with call to action. So, I tried to leave to come here and hang out with you. And everybody was like, oh, what about this? What if we do this? What if we do that? I know this person. And it was a really energizing way to, you know, leave an event that's really solemn and heavy with kind of more pep in my step where I'm like, okay, I got to connect this person with that person. I got to make sure they know about this meeting that's happening. And, like, we're, like, filled with purpose again, you know, which is always the point. So I think it was a good night.
You had another interesting call to action, too, before we move on, about you had gone down with a delegation to D.C. to lobby with a group of maybe, like, 8 or 10 people. And you were prepared to do that again.
Yeah.
And if you could be, you know, and maybe go with people who want to go with you and be sponsored.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, maybe the show can sponsor. Like, hey.
That would be awesome.
Hey, you know, you can go, but, you know, go with Medina to the thing.
Yeah.
Do some kind of contest or something.
Shoot,
I mean, we'll screen. We won't send any crazy people.
Yeah, we do.
Patrons are some of the best people. I will say that.
Yeah. Some of them are also some of the worst people. speaking of the worst people, Rob, do you have a peppermint or maybe some ginger beer? Because my stomach's a bit unsettled. On the way here, I passed a John Carney for mayor.
There's one right down here. I mean, obviously.
There are four on this block, like, around.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so you really are in the belly of the dollar.
I mean, look, it's almost like sometimes I think about it and I'm like, it's almost too on the nose.
It feels fake. It feels like the Matrix is glitching.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this block now is a John Carney sign, a Trump flag, and then the bunker.
Yeah.
It's really jarring. For a moment, I thought it was the same house, and I was like,
"Well,
John Carney Trump voter exists?"
Yeah. Well, I think they put the Carney thing out because of the Trump thing. Everybody's on the block is mad about the Trump flag.
Okay.
Okay, so let's just tell this story.
Yeah, we haven't done it on mic yet.
Yeah. So I think I've mentioned before that I'm really lucky because I feel like I know everybody on the block, at least to look at them and say hello. Everybody who lives within 3 or 4 houses from me, we all know each other, all that stuff. And so when the neighbor put up the Trump flag, I kind of knew he was a goofy guy. And somebody said, oh, he voted for Trump or whatever. Like, I don't really give a shit. they're really cool. They have a daughter that goes to school right in the neighborhood. She has a bunch of friends. They have throw big parties.
They're all white.
His wife's from Puerto Rico. They're all Puerto Rican.
They're all Puerto Rican?
Well, I mean, all her family.
But he's white.
He's a white guy.
I mean, you could be Puerto Rican and white too. My bad, but
true.
Okay. But
he's a
gringo, as they would say.
Correct. And so, but then he put the Trump flag out, and everybody's mad. And like, I'm like, you understand? Number one, we all live in Delaware. It couldn't be more irrelevant. Like the president, like you think Biden's going to get our 3 electoral votes? I think they're pretty much wrapped up. So like, he's just being goofy. Like, and he won't. His daughter's been outside playing, I think, once or twice. I haven't seen his wife at all. I used to see her all the time.
Yeah, because she's
somebody
embarrassed
said,
now? Or?
I don't want to give the people's names out, but one of our neighbors said they saw him. It might have even been Susan. Like, come out of the house, but then they were out of the house, like, as he was, but, like, he ran to his car and got in and left.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't even want to be confronted about
but
it.
But he wants to keep it up.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I have a neighbor like that. I call him, his house is what I call Custer's Last Stand, because in a neighborhood.
It hit me. It took me a second, and I'm like, okay, that's good.
In a neighborhood of, I'm not going to say mostly people of color, but like.
No, it's mostly now.
Okay, it's mostly people of color. And he's like the first house you see when you turn onto our main road. And clearly he's Republican just based on the fact that there's not a single weed in the yard. And it's all like whatever type of grass is in the commercials for like whatever.
He's got nice
weed
like
killer,
a rye blue
Scott's
mix
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. He does all four steps.
His grass is like almost blue. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that
yeah,
kind
yeah,
of grass.
Yeah.
Perfectly manicured and all that. And then he's got this huge flagpole. Top one, of course, America, America first. But the second one he rotates out. Like a middle schooler rotates the little thingy on their Crocs, right? Or like you might put a sticker on your laptop. And normally
it's
Trump.
Can we guess? So it's just Trump.
Yeah.
Trump 20? Is it?
I would say he's got probably four in the regular rotation.
Okay.
So you go ahead and guess which what they
so,
are.
So
just know all of them equal racist white guy in America.
So here's the thing.
POWMIA.
Ooh, that's a good guess, but no.
And
that's
and
not in the regular rotation.
And the Confederate flag's too.
Now.
And the Confederate flag's too racist. I don't think the Confederate flag is out.
That's been
so
replaced
by so many other flags. It's the Gadsden flag.
It's the Gadsden flag, which is that's the don't tread on me.
Don't tread on me. Right.
Yep.
It is the Trump. Is
you gotta
there
be more
a,
specific than that?
Well, is it a Trump 2024?
Yeah.
He probably
take
America back.
Yeah.
Does he have a Let's Go Brandon?
He does.
Is it that's one?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while, but that was
that's
one of the main
there.
Main ones in the rotation.
Okay, and then the fourth one.
Yeah.
So it's not POWMIA. That was a good guess.
No, that was good.
Because I've seen that. I saw a school today. I was like, oh, cool.
Now was he in the service? Is it like a Marines flag or a Navy flag? Because he was in the service.
You're asking me a question when you should be giving me a guess.
Is it a Marine flag?
No.
Army.
No.
Air Force.
No, I'll give you a hint. It changed after the so-called Iranian attacks.
Oh, no.
Oh, the Israeli flag?
It's an Israeli flag.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He put it up back in October, and then it was gone for a while.
No.
And then whenever it was that Iran had the missile.
A million drones that didn't
drone attacks.
The suicide drones, in quotes, that they told everyone they were going to send so that no one would be... impacted or taken by surprise. He's had the Israeli flag up since then. So I don't know why I brought that up. I guess I needed to get it off my chest.
So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Dover, because I have a few questions on a few issues, and then I want to save some time for a big discussion at the end. I clued you in on it. I haven't clued Carl in on it yet, but I want you guys to sort of, I need to do some penance. So here's the issues that I'm sort of interested in, just real quick, and then you can go as long or as short as you want, depending on what you know about them. The healthcare cost board thing seems like everybody showed up in white coats as, quote, stakeholders and were able to get just carve-outs for themselves, like to make sure, like, hey, we did the thing. Remember the thing we said we were going to do? We did it. Of course, we built in, like, four carve-outs for stakeholders that now render the whole thing probably moot. So what should I be thinking about that? What happened?
What happened?
Well,
those are two very different
things. That's a good point.
All right. So I support the, so there was House Bill 350, which was the original, what are they calling it? Healthcare board commission.
So this is just more
hospital cost review board.
More state oversight, more big,
yes,
big government looking at our books.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, like, hospitals, they're nonprofits. There's no transparency around, like, where money's going. All we know is they're saying that they don't have enough money, but they're opening up campuses in other states. And meanwhile, our healthcare outcomes in Delaware are not good, and we're paying in, like, the top five when it comes to costs for hospitals. So, I mean, I think accountability and transparency are long overdue. Now, as for what happened, I think what you described is pretty accurate. Like, hospital execs and, I guess, their lobbyist came down and, like, they fear-mongered. They sent out, they had, like, I mean, I actually got, so let me back up. I'm getting all worked up here. They told their staff that if this bill were to pass, they would have to slash, okay, in italics with an underline, slash, like, $360 million, and that they would fire all these people because they wouldn't be able to afford to pay them anymore. So you better get out there and tell your legislator that your job's on the line, okay? So everybody who works for ChristianaCare was all worked up and in tizzy, understandably. And ChristianaCare is freaking behemoth in this state. So that's basically everyone.
Our largest employer now.
Yeah, like, everyone knows someone who works there.
More than the state or largest private employer?
Largest private,
Yeah. Because okay. I think Dover Air Force Base and the state itself might have.
Gotcha,
more.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But it's like, it impacts a lot of families. And so everybody's all scared. And then I can say personally, I got two text messages from a 5-digit number saying, call your legislators because they want to slash $360 million and tank your health care outcomes and make your service, you know, in hospitals terrible. And, you know, you need to call them and tell them not to support this. Meanwhile, like I said, they say they don't have any money. But somehow they had enough money to hire some campaign service to text people that are not even politically engaged. People I know who are not politically engaged were like, I got this. What's this mean? And it was so, like, heavy-handed that people who were not engaged were texting me like, hey, I guess you guys are doing a good bill. Because it's like, clearly these are the bad guys here. One of my friends sent me a screenshot because her, like, the page for when she gets her treatment was like, you need to reach out. It's like, you're even going to bully patients into lobbying against their interest. Really? Really, guys? Like, how low can you go?
I always smell a rat when I see the at the top of the homepage of Delaware Online, you see, like, just real grumpy physicians in their white coats at Leg Hall with, like, the worst sourpuss looks on their faces. And then you go down to the bottom where the commentary is, and you see that the person who's speaking for them is, like, the CEO of the BB Health System. I'm like, who the fuck are you, dude? Like, who gives a shit about you? Get the fuck out of here. So I knew it was. It just seemed to me, and then when the story came out about the New Deal, you know, and the concessions that were made.
Yeah,
they do a thing now on Delaware Online where they just do bullet points, you know, to give you, like, the summary for morons, like,
yeah.
or for me. How
so
I
instead
don't
of going off headlines, we can go off headlines and a little bit of the actual.
And the second
Axios model.
Yeah, the second or third bullet point said stakeholders, and I just threw my fucking phone down. I was like, fuck this whole thing.
Yeah,
I don't
sometimes
care
I want to use that word, and I'm like looking around like, If I say stakeholders three times, I think Rob's going to pop up in this meeting.
Be like, what the fuck did you just say?
But, yeah, I mean.
So my sense, I guess my general sense of the what happened with those negotiations are fairly accurate.
Oh yeah, so
but
yeah,
there was
I
just
think
a there was a fear mongering going on.
Yeah, fear mongering amongst our constituents and amongst legislators that like, oh, you're in Kent and Sussex County where there's already a shortage of doctors, there's already long wait times, there's already like you're already far away from the closest facility, and they're gonna have to shut down and close their doors if you put this in. And people are rightfully terrified of that, right? So I don't know exactly what happened, but my understanding is that the bill is going to be amended. And with the amendment, it's still going to be probably the most progressive hospital, like, budget oversight in the country. And so I'm excited about that.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, because like right now, Delaware is ranked as the fourth highest state for annual healthcare costs. And that's not just hospitals, but hospital costs are a big chunk of it. And then here's another development, I'll say. That we passed that out of the House, I think, 2 weeks ago. Tomorrow, I think it'll be 2 weeks. And yesterday, there was an article that came out that ChristianaCare's doctors are unionizing.
Which, to be fair, not all of them. It's only like 3% of their overall workforce, but
okay, but
it's a big.
It's
move.
Enough people, and I think it's a, what's the word I want here?
Well, it's the first time in like 50 years that there's been a serious effort to unionize.
I think it's a major indicator for like how things are going in that system.
Yeah.
And I
yeah,
think
the
it,
case that
yeah.
was made, the case that was made for it was. When you read, you know, the doctors talking about their working conditions,
right?
You're like, yeah, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
I can get their ass.
So
I thought it was great.
I'm excited because I think, you know, there's the argument that like, oh, we're doing all we can. We really can't afford to like cut cost. Okay, show us. Right now, there's no we don't get any. There's no light. There's no sunlight on that. We're just taking their word for it. And then we're seeing them open up facilities in other states, like I said.
and buy out, like, every doctor's office.
Yeah, literally just, like, so I'm excited to see. And it's, like, one of those situations where it's, like, I hope you're wrong. But if you're right, then we'll deal with that. So.
Yeah, at least there's a mechanism in place. And if the mechanism's still strong, my concern was that, like, it's an oversight board in name only. You can't do. You know,
we've
that's
had
how they
that. Yeah, so we've had that.
Okay.
Since I think 2018.
Okay.
This is actually adding some teeth to that.
Okay. Yeah, well, then.
So
you know what?
We'll see.
I'll give it you a know, half.
I think
half
it's pretty
w.
good, but you know, having the people that have backed it make me think it can't be that good. Like it's better than nothing, but like you know,
right?
When you got like the governor signing off on it. Yeah.
Well, I think somebody told me
it's not
like,
Medicare
it was
for
like
all.
It was a thing that, you know, going out the door. Maybe Carney can campaign on it, you know, for Przycki's third term. I mean, can you imagine? This is the way I'm framing it. Jack Markell, the way he's thought about here in the belly of the beast, here in the metropole of the Delaware Way, the Highlands, he's thought of where now he was governor for two terms, and he lives in a Roman villa. And he's the ambassador to Italy. It's a huge Roman compound. Beautiful, beautiful property and home. Yeah, Villa Taverna, it's called. And Carney's so well-liked, he gets to run for Przycki's third term as mayor. Because he's a fucking loser. It's just so funny to me.
Well,
And this is like, maybe this is like a little thing he can say, like, because this wasn't just a Carney thing. This was the one time that he had like a thing that it was like,
yeah.
Let's do this right out the door.
It was like a DHSS.
Well, I think he was the one who introduced the benchmark idea like earlier on in his first term. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too. It's like these guys, look, if you want to build a legacy on the way out. And it helps people. I'll take it.
Yeah, fine.
I'll take it.
Still gonna hound you around the city though.
Exactly.
Yeah, you've done enough other bad stuff that
I do expect
you do
that
things,
your neighbors will have signs out in 8 to 12 years for John Carney for school board.
That's awesome. He's going to be the...
Yeah, and then after that, he'll be the inspector at your local polling location.
Second state topic.
Yeah, what's up? What do we got?
The death penalty bills.
Support them.
Correct. I mean,
it's worth the death penalty.
No, I guess I wonder how you feel about the constitutional amendment and whether or not there's a sufficient will and numbers to go with the constitutional amendment, which I think is like one is 70 and one is like 310 or something.
I doubt it. No. Yeah, I don't see any constitutional amendments happening this year, honestly, because we need Republican votes for that and we need every Democrat. And that seems to be an impossible task, is to get every Democrat on bills like that. And the Republicans are, a lot of them are up for re-election with a credible, you know, opposition. So I don't see them pivoting to the left at all. I think they're going to go right. Hopefully they'll lose in November, and then we can try it again next year.
I'm a little bit concerned the way that the school lunch, free school lunch, was received. I mean, it seemed to me that, and this was like a, you know, sort of a working families party thing. We had Hassani Perkins in here to talk about it.
Yeah.
It seems to me that they were like, this costs money, don't do it. And then they were like, oh, we can't do it, sorry.
Yeah, I mean.
And that was it. Like, thanks, Kim Williams.
I think a big problem we have is Delaware is a strong governor state.
Well, it's a strong governor
strong
system.
Strong executive, not the governor, but has an executive. Yes,
guys,
it's executive.
It should go without
heady.
Saying that I know I could beat John Carney in an arm wrestling competition, but, you know. Yeah, so there are some places where, like, the legislature is the stronger part of the government, but in Delaware, the governor makes the budget, and then we get to, like, tinker with it. And we just don't have the staff to actually, like, really do our own budget without using the governor's staff's estimates on things, etc. So the governor gives us a budget in January normally.
Yeah. Also, should note, when the fiscal note, so the amount that the bill's going to cost, it's from the Comptroller General's office, which is within the legislature. But often the estimates they're using on how much something is going to cost to the state is from the governor's office.
Yeah, that's
so
really
they're using
important.
Inputs from the governor's budget office
to, like,
to determine. That
right.
This
is, so for example, right, you say I want to do a bill that, I don't know,
gives free school lunch
to all kids, right?
Starve
and then
those kids.
And you're like, that'll cost this much money because there's this many kids that are paying for lunch, and lunch costs this much money. And it's this many days in the year. And then they'll say, oh, well, actually, it would cost us more money than that because we're going to need to hire people who can keep track of who actually eats the luncheon. And, like, all these different things start to come up where they're like, actually, we need to upgrade our system. Because if we don't upgrade the system, then we can't track who ate the lunch and who didn't. Oh, no, if we're going to do this, now it's going to cost more money for this.
We got to renegotiate our contract with this cool supply company. And
right.
We're going to bump it up because of inflation.
And, like, don't get me wrong.
We got to call that...
Things
gotta
cost money.
Call that Hanrahan in to go over these numbers again. Yeah, so it's all sounds like
it's not. It's not all, but
it's
like
not, right. Well, I mean, I'm
like,
sure there is. Some...
We don't have the staff capacity in the legislature to argue every single estimate. Like there are times where we're like, okay, well, what if you shuffle things around, or what if you do this and that? But that takes resources. We just don't have that. So a lot of times, you know, a legislator will introduce an idea, a bill, and then. Our staff will look at it and say, okay, well, that's probably going to cost this much money. But they're basing that, like Carl said, off of the governor's staff and what they're saying it's going to cost. The other thing is, if the governor hasn't made it a priority, you're dealing with a budget where we expect this much money to, you know, this much revenue to come to the state. And we're expecting this much of it to go towards state employee health care and claims and things like that. And we have this much we can work with. And he's already apportioned it to his priorities, not yours. And by the time you introduce the bill in session and it's got this fiscal note attached to it that says it costs X million amount of dollars, there's no money for that in the budget. And it takes, I think, a progressive governor who shares our priorities to put those priorities in the budget ahead of time for us to really get things that cost money done. And we just aren't at that point right now. Oh, well, yeah. But here's something funny about that, which
I mean,
learned.
We could do both.
But here's something that's not ideal, right, is we, the legislature, and the House in particular, you know, we are the ones who can raise taxes. It has to start in the House. And then it gets to the Senate. And say we pass it this year, the amount that it would raise, it's not like you can say, oh, we're going to raise $10 million next year, so we're going to pay... We're going to use that $10 million to cover free lunch and also other legislative priorities. No, we're going to pass it. And then the governor writes a new budget where he will spend the $10 million on whatever he wants to put it towards. And now we've got to figure out a way to move things around. So we're always behind the eight ball unless there's some kind of coordination between the legislature and the governor. And when you see priorities like, I'm trying to think of some examples from this year's budget.
Delaware Prosperity Partnership.
I was trying to keep it positive.
Oh, the good one. Well, I mean, the $110 million for affordable housing.
Right, right. He had a new school,
well.
I think, in the city of Wilmington, right? Like, money for some of the libraries to get renovated.
Like bond stuff.
Yeah, well, that's a whole, let's not even get into the bond versus
operating. Loaning
but,
money.
But that's the other thing, right? Like, it's easy for us to, when we have more money, spend it once on something. But most of what we want as progressives is not a one-time expense. It's operating costs that we're going to have to spend every year, and it's likely going to get bigger and bigger every
year. Yeah, sounds pretty bumpy. Might want to smooth that out a little bit.
Well, this is a good segue, if you guys don't mind, if you'll indulge me.
Yeah.
Because two things just came up for which need to be discussed. Number one, a governor who is on the same page as the legislature. For the reasons that you said.
On the good same boat with a good legislature.
Right. I mean, the fact of the matter is, let's be honest. I will say this, and this is something we can talk about for the second part, too. I feel like the legislature is definitely going in the right direction. It's trending in the right direction. And I also, and I think we've talked about this, like, are there any opportunities, like, and I don't really care at this point, but, like, people might come to our side just because it's the cool thing to do now, and that's what everybody's doing.
There are people that will do that, but not until we get a few more people on there.
And I guess that's what I mean. I think between the general trend of the legislature and the idea of getting the governor on the same page as a good legislature will actually just convince other people just to go with the flow.
So
that's the first thing. The first thing is the governor. The other thing is my tendency to unnecessarily trigger. if you know what I mean. These two things fit together. When the Working Families Party endorsed Colin O'Mara for governor, I was a little bit perplexed for reasons, and maybe this is a problem. Maybe I didn't articulate the reasons. But I did ask. I was like, "What are we doing here? What's the plan?" Like, there's two candidates, which makes it a little weirder because, you know, like, there's two sort of establishment-y type of candidates. Doesn't seem like it works, and the person's not really.
There's three candidates.
Well, there was two. Now there's three.
Okay, yeah.
That's
okay.
What I meant. Like, you're coming. You're not challenging one. You're challenging two establishment candidates who really already have within the political world huge constituencies in Delaware. So I was like, I didn't know how it would work.
Yeah.
And I also thought, like, you know, not every candidate has to be a working class person. Not every candidate needs to be like. You know, they can all be different, but I would have thought that they would have had some connection to the work we're doing in Delaware, or they were being trained by WFP. I know there are people in the WFP pipeline who are getting kind of training and stuff, and so this kind of came out of left field for me. And I follow the stuff. I mean, not all the time, but I follow. So I didn't understand it, and. You know, I didn't make, I mentioned it, but I kind of didn't make it clear. Carl gave me some information and some other people gave me some information about it. This didn't make sense to me. Without coming to a reasonable sort of conclusion on this topic, and one of the reasons was because I still would like to talk to him. I like him, have him come in. So I didn't want to talk too much about it before we came back. But okay. what happened was, is I started needling Carl about it, like needling him about like what are we doing here, like what's this guy. And what the one thing I think I didn't fully comprehend was that because I'm not on Delaware Liberal or like I'm not on Facebook, like I guess I didn't think about other people saying shit to you probably about it.
Oh, it's been constant.
Oh.
And it became clear to me because then I started going back to the office after I got, and people were like yelling at me about it. Now, I don't care about them because
they're just yelling at you.
Well, yelling, saying like people who know that I'm associated or I'm a member of Working Families Party because a lot of the management, and yelling's the wrong word. They're like, hey, we're kind of like Meyer's going to work with us kind of thing. So what are they doing? Now, again, I don't give a shit about that. That's not a good reason. Like, because the professional managerial class want Meyer should not come into the fucking play. So I don't really care about that. But what it showed me was that like, oh, you must be getting constant fucking shit.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was busting balls just privately on a text message with Carl.
Yeah.
But then it came to, I was just like, these people start talking to me. And then I'm thinking like, I did look at Delaware Liberal like a week or two ago, and there was like a blow up about it. So now I'm like,
every call-in post on Delaware Liberal gets like 80 comments. It's hilarious.
Yeah, and that's the only ones I read. That's the Bill Martin rule. It has to, or did he got that from you? It has to be over 20 comments.
I think that was his original.
That's Bill Martin.
I mean, I think that's like, yeah, you know, I am.
So we all check it. We all check it once a week, but we only read the post with more than 20 comments.
That's a funny threshold.
Which is a lot more self restraint than most Delaware politicos.
Yeah, but again, so yeah. I got into Carl. I overdid it. You just said, I think I said. So, one, I wanted to recognize the fact that I overdid it. That's the first thing.
Okay. So it was a really long apology.
Kind of. But
all right.
But,
if you fast forwarded, this is where you can join us again. Okay. So we.
So yeah.
I will accept the apology. So and I will also say that I'm proudly Team Colin. Hashtag Team Colin.
Well,
okay,
that's
I think
fine.
That's part two.
Okay, so part two is like, let's. So, do you think? Because you made a point to me, which was actually pretty funny when I was needling you about like, what do you care? You're not even going to vote, which is fair.
I mean, dude, I was just.
I mean, probably.
I was doing something else, and I was like, I don't have time for this conversation.
I'm sure
yeah, and I was
like
I looked at it, and I was like. It's a good point.
Yeah. It's
but
like,
on the flip side, what do you think? My first thing is like, and I'm not talking about me. I'm just talking about in general. If there's a person like me out there, who's sort of like, isn't really happy with the two choices, and is looking for somebody that's a way to go, like I feel like I should be like people should be like, hey, this is why he's good.
Yeah.
But that's not happening. Or at least it didn't happen when I first asked.
Yeah, I'm trying to do better at that because, you know, that is my job now.
Yeah.
So let me tell you a Colin story.
Okay.
Or my Colin story.
Yes. That was this is what I wanted.
My Colin story.
What are we, in like cult now?
Yeah.
Yeah, look. We're locking the door.
This is my Colin
story.
So,
my first interaction with Colin actually was for like 10 seconds back in 2022. He actually stopped by our 2022 WFP, like, results watch party for the primary because he's friendly with Sophie because they've done work together on like environmental justice stuff, and she was stopping by because she had her own thing and stopped by, and he was at her thing, came by our thing, we met, he said hello, he said thanks for all the work you do. I was like, oh, thanks, okay. Like, I kind of knew who he was, like, obviously it's a name that you kind of know if you're in Delaware.
That's that guy, Denrick guy, that's how I know him. That guy, didn't he do something?
And so then the stuff that I learned, so like, was aware of him going on from that, like, heard in, like, early 2023, like, oh, yeah, he's considering running for governor. Like, we know it's going to be Matt. We know it's going to be Bethany. I know there's rumors that, like, Kathy Jennings might jump in, or, like, other random people that ended up not jumping in were going to jump in. And so then Bethany announces, or who, Matt announced first, actually.
Officially,
they announced both around the same time.
That's why you can't tell, because they were both running. They were both running.
Yeah, they both were running. Oh yeah, Bethany announced very late, considering that she was basically starting to run.
Yeah,
because she had to do 17 audits.
That she was running and to support.
And like Bethany, you know, I don't mind her personally. She's very fun to talk to. Matt, I obviously like a lot personally, and I've done work with him in the past. And obviously people who've worked on like police reform stuff have generally, not universally, but generally good things to say about him. But I was like, I mean, a lot of the good things that Matt has done have been because he got a lot of free money from the federal government. Like, Hope Center would not have happened without the CARES Act funding, which is like, it's good that he used it to do that thing. But like, in terms of other stuff, like, he's done other good stuff, certainly, but like the things that we would point to, for example, to be like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Like, a lot of it is very conditional.
And we've talked about that. I think you and I were on the same page on it.
Like the guy a lot personally. People act really weird about him in ways that are like obviously not good and like sometimes anti-Semitic. And I think it's good to call that out. But I was like, you know, I think we made a decision.
He's
basically
also, let's not forget, like, public enemy number one for the, like, he,
yeah, the unions
labor?
Do not like him for a combination of good and bad reasons.
Yeah, I mean, again, and we've talked about this too. The organized labor in Delaware is sort of like the old school building trades. They're not exactly bastions of leftist thought.
No,
they like, so it's like,
I mean, you can say that, but you can also say that, like, I would say a lot of people that are our constituency are not like reading freaking. I can't even name a philosopher to make the point because I don't read that crap.
Well, I guess what I'm
like,
saying is
I would love to eventually become a well-read leftist, but my values align with the majority of union leadership and a lot of union members. And they're working-class Delawareans, and some of them are not working-class because they have great jobs because the unions, like, protect them. And I might not agree with them on certain, like, whatever, like, guns or whatever, but, like, I do take issue with dismissing their importance in our movement and the work that they've done for, like, Delawareans. You always talk about, like, oh, this policy is, it's nibbling around the edges and it's only going to help 10 people and 100 people. Like, the unions have helped thousands of Delaware households get out of poverty, send kids to college, afford to buy a boat, buy a car, and keep our economy going, right?
Like, and buy the boat first.
The beautiful boat.
Yeah.
But, like, that's really important work, and it's not easy, and they've done a lot of it, you know, without any support in the legislature, and they're very happy to have progressive members in the House now that they can rely on to get more things done. So I think it's a major red flag that they are so adamantly against Matt.
But anyway, so that's all to say that, like, you know, Matt, that was a flaw with Matt that I had. And specifically the thing that, like, initially set the unions off against him, other than the fact that they liked Tom Gordon before him, was there was a like community workforce agreement type agreement where every project over a certain amount that got county funding would have to have a project labor agreement. And he signed a bill to increase that amount so that fewer projects needed PLAs. So that's like the first thing back in like 2017 that set them off. So just give a little bit of background there and like the concrete concerns, and obviously community workforce agreements is hopefully going to be a big thing in the next 5 to 10 years in Delaware. And
yeah,
you know, that's something that I would imagine probably not support. So had these two, and just to give a little insight into Working Families Party, because some people have asked about this, is we have two basically like bodies, so to speak, that make decisions around who we choose to support. So one is our general vetting team. So anybody who is an active member. We had monthly trainings, but we're not really doing much vetting over the next few months. But we normally will have trainings every month of like, hey, how our recruitment system works. And then if you go through that and you show up to at least a couple meetings, then we'll invite you to our vetting team. Right now, there's 30 people on paper. It's about half of them, like a little half of them, like regularly are part of that. And so that's our main decision-making body. So that is the members that actually, they're the ones who are doing the interviews. They're the ones who are making the decisions. They're the ones who are voting. And then once they vote, people get moved into candidate coaching, or in the case of like a statewide candidate where we don't need to coach, then we, like, you know, keep in contact with them. Basically, the goal of that is to see, like, dig in a little bit more into their background to be like, okay, is this person legit? Are they going to do the work? Do they have a possibility of winning? And then our state committee, which is like a core of seven committed, like, longtime activists. The list is not public right now. I do want to make that public at some point because I want more transparency in the process. But then they look at those.
I can just say they legit.
But they're good people, yeah.
Yeah, well, and again, I never questioned. I didn't question that. Yeah. I did find it interesting.
People
and
do,
I'm
though.
Glad.
People do, because, like, you don't know who it is.
Which is
so
fair.
Like,
yeah,
well,
I mean, I don't.
But
that's why I want to make it public.
They're not,
right.
That's not an easy group to go in front of. I'll just say that.
Yeah. But yeah, and so then they are basically the ones who, of those people who, so if, for example, we made a decision, and I'm going to say this because we are not endorsing this race. So I can, if we were to say in lieutenant governor's race, we were like, oh, we like Sherry over Kyle, then the state committee could not be like, actually, no, we like Kyle. They would just, are we endorsing Sherry or not? So that's membership makes a decision like who we're supporting. And then the state committee is like, okay, are we actually endorsing this person? And so, like, there are several people every year who go through coaching and just don't get endorsement, either because we don't think it's a big enough priority or because we're like, we don't think this person is, like, actually going to, like, we voted them into coaching, but in coaching, we're like, eh, I don't know about this person. So that's just to give an idea of, like, what the process is like. So
it's not just Carl waving his magic wand.
Right. I think
which that was one
that.
Thing I knew.
Yeah.
You knew, right. But I think a lot of people are just like, oh, like,
yeah,
Carl,
people think I'm some sort of
kingmaker.
Yeah.
Make it rain.
But yeah, and so that's our process. And so early on in the process, we had a committee, a conversation with the state committee and then also with the vetting team. A lot of this is just context, so people know what I'm talking about when I'm telling the story. And we're like, okay, here's some of these races that are coming up. What do we want to do? Like, here's who's reached out to us. Here's, like, the races that, like, me or a state committee member or, like, somebody in the activism was like, I think this race is important because X, Y, Z. And we basically decided we wanted to get involved in state house races, which has obviously been our bread and butter, potentially one or two county races, and then congressional. So we had our vetting. We made our decisions. We ended up coaching in congressional, but not actually end up endorsing for reasons that if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you might have an idea of what happened.
Regular listeners are not going to not know what you're talking about.
And, like, you know, it's not changing my personal vote necessarily, but, you know, we just, our priorities and our resources, we have to do what we have to do. And we decided, like, governor, lieutenant governor, like, city, like, we were probably not going to get involved with that because, for one, nobody had reached out to us at that point. This was, like, early last fall. And also, it was, like, the candidates that are in the race right now, some of them are, like, nice people and, like, we don't dislike personally, but we don't see the reason to, like, really throw down for them, especially for a statewide race. And then in around, like, late November, early December, some labor person, I think, actually, connected me with Colin, who was, at that point, I think he announced December 5th that he'd created his committee, that he was like, oh, yeah, I'm planning to run for governor now. Would love to talk. And so I was like, okay, I'll talk. Because someone had forwarded me, like, his proposed platform, and I was looking through. I was like, oh, okay. This is, like, not what I was expecting, because I didn't really know much about him. And so he came to us and was like, hey, I want to run. I would like WP support. I'm running, like, on a very progressive platform, and I want to, like, kind of throw down with you guys. And so I brought that back to, like, our vetting team, state committee. I was like, hey, I had this conversation with Colin. It was actually, like, pretty good. Does anybody want to consider this? And they're like, yeah, sure. And so we sent out questionnaires to all the candidates. I actually talked to everybody. We had vetting panel with Colin, with Matt. Did not schedule with Bethany because she never got back to us. I met with her and everything. It was a good conversation. And the team decided based on that Colin was their guy. Like, we interviewed both. And, like, Matt is Matt. Like, if you listen to the episode, it's not that much different than what you probably heard in here. But Colin just, like, the things I'll say about him, because I don't want to give away specific things that happened in interviews, because we keep them private because we want people to be able to speak their mind. But Colin, way, way, way more detail-oriented, which is, you know, Matt's a administrator. Like, he has experience with the detail, but like in terms of how to support progressive policies, Colin was way better on that. And Colin spoke to like movement politics in a way that was much more what we were looking for, and something like issues we'd had with other candidates, so they weren't speaking in these terms, like supporting other candidates, co-governance, like working together, not just like, hey, what do you guys think of this, but like appointing people to specific positions and like reaching out to members of communities and people who are already doing the work and supporting that work through other things. And so through my process, I'm like, okay, this all sounds very good, like for one reason or the other. And none of it is that different from what he has said publicly. And that was my other big thing, is like, okay, is he just telling this to us? And like, he's then going to go to some other group and like say something else. But then
can I ask a question here at this part of the process? Cause again, this is something we talked about, and I need to understand it too, because I'm asking questions. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. My understanding was sort of what you said, is that the vetting team is going to have worked with somebody for a period of time, or have known them or kind of gotten through them. The way this worked, actually,
so though, this is all the initial.
Is the so was there anything in your mind when you know that the labor, the organized labor, sort of like I don't want to say they sabotaged, or not sabotaged, but they like they jumped on his shit and then released his vetting thing through them. You know, they put it on Facebook or whatever. So they don't like.
Oh, I
they
missed that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was the whole thing.
Yeah, so they fuck with them and put it on Facebook.
Yeah, that was.
So
yeah.
These labor
guys. Like
so.
Colin?
No,
Matt.
So
Matt's AFL-CIO interview.
Oh, you mean the closed door meeting that was.
Yeah.
That they leaked. Yeah. So.
Got it. Okay.
So my concern would be. We know that they have a bug up their ass about Meyer for good reasons.
Oh, the worry that he would be like intentionally.
So a labor leader rings you up.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to talk to this guy?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, that sounds good.
I mean,
but there's like something there. You see what I'm saying?
Let me give you some more context. Like, timing. From my understanding, the timing was when Bethany's campaign was going to.
Was tanking.
Crap.
Yeah, I think that's had something to do with it.
And everybody assumed, like, there was this assumption that, because she told people that she was not going to continue running.
Right.
She was going to suspend her campaign.
Yes.
Like, a lot of people were looking. I mean, people were reaching out to me. Are you going to run for governor? And I was like, I
people
mean,
really
I like
wanted
having free
Eugene
time.
To run for governor, too, which is very funny.
Yeah, and he doubled down on the Congress thing for some reason. So, yeah, that's part of it. I don't think that was, like, a malicious, like, third candidate to skew.
No, not even a third candidate, but even
whatever. It's
even
just,
if
it was
Bethany drops
be,
out.
Yeah.
Even, let's just hype. She said to multiple people she was doing that.
Yeah.
She didn't do it.
Right.
But even if she had, even if it's just Meyer. And I get a call about somebody who's not working with us now.
Yeah.
Not
well,
even
so
not living
a,
here.
Right,
and then and
that
that's that step that like that's the step that I'm nervous about. Very nervous
think,
about.
Oh, yeah, so I want to finish my vetting story.
I just wanted to make sure
right,
I understood
we're getting
that
there.
Part.
We're getting there.
So like, you know, if people get connected to us, so like I had Debbie Harrington reach out to me, I had Sherry Dorsey Walker reach out to me, I had a good meeting with Kyle. Like, we meet with people all the time for various reasons. Sometimes they reach out directly. Sometimes someone gets them in touch with them. And then I just bring that conversation back to our state committee and our vetting team to be like, hey, do we want to, like, go forward with this? And in the case of governor, we were like, yeah, let's give it a shot. Because governor is a very, very important – like, it is the most powerful – as we were saying, we have a strong governor system. It is by far the most powerful seat in Delaware state government. And we're like – if we have someone who's willing to work with us on this, it's willing to, we should have a conversation in terms of like.
For the reasons Medina just said.
Were people who didn't like Matt trying to get us to do this? Probably. Like everybody has like their own interests, and people who do like Matt were also trying to get us to do the other thing. Like.
And people who don't like Matt, it's not like they don't. Too many negatives there. It's not that they don't like him and that's the only reason why they don't want him to win. They don't think that he's going to follow through on things that are important to their constituencies. And in this case, I would argue it's an important constituency to the movement.
Yeah, but I'm not looking for the organization that I'm affiliated with to pick a candidate because they're anti-Matt.
No. Yeah.
I know, I get that, but I'm saying
I don't think anti-Matt
is reductive.
Yeah. Well,
I'm just
responding to what you're saying. Like these are people who don't like Matt for whatever reason.
Yeah.
They're not that, so this is something we should explore. And I agree with all of that.
Yeah,
but I don't think like I don't.
Yeah, so I think the point of what I was saying is not that, like, this is a one-time thing that someone who didn't like somebody else reached out. Like, people reach out to us about all different sorts of candidates for all different sorts of reasons. And this is just, like, the initial connection that got made. But the next thing I wanted to say, so one is that, like, we had these interviews and just the membership decided, like, it wasn't a unanimous vote for Colin, obviously. But we had a split and we decided to go with Colin. And my role in this is, you know, I help facilitate in terms of, like, making sure that we're scheduling and, like, hearing the initial conversations and taking notes and being like, here's what I heard. But the vote, like, I don't vote on these things. But I do want to say that...
quit complaining to Carl. Figure out the other people on the...
But yeah, so the thing I want to say, though, is in the lead up to, like, a lot of it was before the vote, like, the vetting panel vote, because I wanted to make sure people had the full information. Because, like, we know a lot about Matt. Like, Matt's been...
He's a known quantity.
He's a known quantity. Bethany is a known quantity. Colin, like, less so because he's lived in Delaware. He's, like, been doing some stuff in Delaware, not in our specific circles. But so I was like, okay, who do I know that knows Colin? And so I started reaching out to people. I reached out to people like there's names I shouldn't say. I'll say it now.
Or beep them out.
So you know.
Just say it to me and beep it out.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Like, people that we know and, like, really fuck with. And every single person that has worked with him in the last 10 years, and I specify 10 years, because we talked to people who do not fuck with Colin either. Like, Jordan is our obvious, the most obvious one. I didn't talk with her, but obviously Amy Rowe is not a big Colin fan. And so, like, people who had dealt with him when he was DenRec secretary had, like, mixed but leaning negative, at least in our circles, views on him. Everybody I talked to who has worked with him since then had, and, like, people who are very progressive, very movement people, had glowing things to say. So the thing I'll say about Colin in terms of the work he's done the last 10 years, obviously a lot of it's national. He's with the National Wildlife Foundation. But people that I know that work in the environmental justice space, whether that's, like, in Route 9, some people in Sussex, some people in between, like, most everybody that I talked to that had worked with him had very, very good things to say. And obviously on environmental justice being one big thing, but he's also done work behind the scenes on police reform, on labor issues, on, like, other things that we care about, and is, like,
development.
Who is, like, and has done, like, pretty good work on that. And I mean, Benita, I know you had some.
Yeah, I mean, I would just echo that. And I talked to a lot of people who, and like, to be real, right? Like, he was saying all the right things, and I'm like, I don't think that we deserve nice things. So
yeah.
It feels like this guy is just saying, like, he's just trying to
make
a
lane. I think it's important
to
emphasize how skeptical we all were at the start.
We all were incredibly skeptical. And it's also, it's like I said, it's like, it feels like we don't deserve good things here. So when someone comes to you and they're like, I want to run as a progressive, these are the things that I want to get done. I want WFP to be involved and at the table. I'm like, you're just saying that. And so I did my due diligence as well. I had worked with Colin. But I wasn't in state government when he was DenRec secretary. And a lot of what people that I know have, the issues they have with him have to do with his time as secretary under Markell. And so I reached out to people that I trust and who share values with me that were around then. And I'm like, this guy's saying all this stuff. Like, what do you think? You think he's making it up? You think he's just, like, playing to this like lane that's clearly there in this race? And they're like, the one thing that I can say about Colin is that he's genuine. And that was from multiple people who, like I said, share values, share policy ideas, but also from people who I don't always agree with. They're not supporting him. But they were like, I would never say that Colin is not a genuine person.
Now, during this process, what was his reflections on his time?
On the DenRec stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like... there's a portfolio of.
I think that would be a great episode.
There's a portfolio of items that, you know, they're not good.
Yeah.
But again, I understand as someone who, you know, sort of isn't really proud of a lot of the way I made a living for a long time. Like, I understand that. So you might hold certain views and still have done that stuff.
Did he reflect on that at all? I think he has.
Okay.
I would also add that, like, he was, at the time, the youngest cabinet secretary in the country. So he was, like, a very energetic, optimistic Yeah, the whiz kid.
Oh, God.
He was just, like, super,
don't,
like,
don't, he was very, I was telling someone,
he was the environmentalist kid in the room.
It's, like, the very early Obama era, like, we're going to get the best men and the best guys in the room sort of thing.
Well, the Obama era thing didn't really pan out, though, did it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and so I think from talking to him, because obviously that's something that we bring up in, like, when I had the conversation, was like, you know, there's a lot of people that don't like you. He's like, yeah, I know. And yeah, I think he's definitely, like, he's brought up stuff and was willing to answer any question we had. Like, some of the stuff that is, like, the less egregious stuff, I think he still stands by to a certain extent. But other stuff, he's like, yeah, that was, like, we did that and it was wrong and we shouldn't do that again.
Okay.
Yeah. I would also add, Rob, that, like, it's not like he just popped up, right? Like, Carl shared he talked to people that we know that are very active at the community level. Like, not in state government necessarily, but in, like, HOA meetings and, like, civic association meetings where they talk about issues that are impacting their communities. And in the one good thing I would say that Biden has done since he got elected is put a lot of money into environmental justice work. And so he has been really active with people. I also, like, I met him years ago when he was in legislative hall lobbying for environmental legislation. But I got to actually work with him when I was working at the University of Delaware Biden Institute. And we had classes, and he came in and taught an environmental justice class. And, like, I'm pretty sure that's when he met Sophie. And, like, he was very much involved in what was going on at the community level. And, like, would reach out and be like, hey, like, who are good people for me to talk to on this issue, that issue, like, very early on, right, in me being elected. And I think it was very clear he was not just, like, popping in because he was running for office. It was, like, genuine care for the community and the, like, you kind of leveraging the privilege that he does have coming from a national organization, being, like, a economically well-off white guy.
Yeah, they get paid. He is paid very well.
You know, I admire that because there's a lot of people. It's very easy to, like, not do that. and set yourself up for, like, perpetual success. And I think he's someone who's really driven by his values. And so I'm excited to support him. It still doesn't really feel real because, like I said, feels like we're doomed to not ever get anything of substance done. But I think it'd be great to bring him in.
I'm excited. It's going to happen. It's just, you know, a matter of time. And, I mean, my only critique, I think, at this point, now having a full, much clearer picture, is that, and I think you hit the nail on the head about just, like, transparency. Like, yeah, you had inside conversations with, like, people. Now, again, I trust a lot of these people. I think I trust all of them that you mentioned that we beeped out, and I certainly trust, you know, Medina and the other people that I know were on the committee to endorse. And so I'm buying into that. I just wish more, like, there was, like, we're having to do a lot of selling after the fact when maybe we could have done it, like, I don't know. I mean, did you consider, obviously you want to do this as soon as possible, but, like, I have to admit, and I really don't think this is, like, just me saying this. He did, to most people, look like he came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I don't know whether that, you know, how could that have been dealt with?
I don't know. Part of my criticism of that, right? To my knowledge, the endorsement came out the same week as the kickoff, where people who had concerns or questions or thoughts and prayers could have shown up and actually heard from the candidates. And I think Colin, but a lot of the other candidates who were there, really articulately shared why they're running. And I think it was obvious to anyone in the room why WFP chose to endorse them. I think it's very obvious when you actually get to know the candidates.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying because of the way that it transpired, it didn't look right. It looked off. But now that I have sort of all of this information, it doesn't look so off anymore.
Yeah, and, like, I obviously the two of us are, like, super involved, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely sort of to the original point around, like, is there anything we can do differently in the future to make it seem less weird? I think, like, yes, absolutely. I did try throughout the process while realizing, like, oh, yeah, this is probably going to come off a bit strange. Just, like, Because our process is way more involved than most organizations, because we do a lot more than most organizations. Like, we don't just send a check or, like, put out a post. Like, we work with people. We knock on doors. We try to work with them after the election. So we try to be like, okay, is this person legit or not? And so you have to balance this with the fact that we live in Delaware, and there's, I think it's safe to say, a lot of people who are kind of out to get us. Not to be too paranoid about it, but
no, that's my thing, right? It's like a habit. Yeah, I'm paranoid, but am I paranoid enough?
You know, there's going to be a lot of people who are listening to this episode combing over every second of it to be like, oh, got him on that or got her on that. And so that's just life, and we got to live with that. Yeah.
I actually, again, and this is something that I've been doing in my other capacities around the state, I've been embracing it.
What, the paranoia?
Well, the paranoia, but also the fact that, like, yeah, I mean, if people think, like, oh, Working Families Party are bad, radicals or this, whatever, they hate us, whatever, good, like, just lean into it. Fuck them.
Yeah, but you also don't want to, like, open yourself up to sabotage or for whatever it is, right?
Right.
Like,
well, that's, and like I guess I guess that was kind of what I'm all for doing something sort of like, as you were explaining,
gotcha,
like sort of out of left field and saying, we're going to go with this, and this is how we're going to ride or die. But like I said, it just came off a little bit sort of weird.
And so,
but like, I'm open to it.
Yeah. And so I think, so a few things that I want to do differently next time, just like, these are not things that I'm 100% definitely going to do, because a lot of it is like the state committee has to decide on some of this stuff. But like, things that I'm thinking of for next time is, one, I would like to have more public discussions about our priorities and like expand that group or of people who are having discussions about that and like posting about it more publicly. Because the thing is, we do have a lot of this stuff public. People just don't look at it. Like, we had this like recruitment meeting every month where it was like, hey, if you want to join our recruitment team, join this training. People didn't join. And then we like our, this was not at the beginning of the cycle, but I put it up like sometime late last year. Like, our entire endorsement process is on the site now. Like, if you go to deworkingfamilies.org endorsements, it's all there. Like, the stuff's written out. We don't publish who we're coaching before we endorse. That's something that like maybe we could do, but in certain cases, for example, if we were to do a primary challenger for the Speaker of the House, one of the things that has happened continuously, and the reason that people have not run in the past, is because their name gets out there and they get threatened, they get fired, they get, like, bad things happen to people who choose to run. And if we have the ability to protect that person, then I want to protect that person. Obviously, that's not Colin's case.
Yeah, like, well, that's the thing. That was the sort of the way I understood it. And I'm,
but if we have like a policy that we're doing, I try to keep it consistent for everyone.
Right, and then that was the tricky thing for me, because we won't say any names, but I've known more people than I can even count right now who have been in the pipeline, training, been recruited, talked about all of this stuff, and have been in the pipeline. Most of them don't ever get endorsed. Some of them do. But my initial thing was, like, I know he wasn't.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm like, well, what happened here? He wasn't even in the pipeline. We weren't even, like, we weren't giving him the, you know, because, like, somebody like Frank Burns. This is over the course of several different sort of cycles, he's worked with you guys. And, yeah, he's not a, you know, he's not a politician. He doesn't, but he has a pedigree or bona fides that he came through and worked with you guys. He ran before, and he's been in that pipeline. So that was I think for me, that was the thing that was like made it off.
Because
I'm like, well, I thought it worked like this. But there was like a, well, we will entertain ideas I don't necessarily think that's wrong.
Yeah.
I just didn't know that.
Yeah, and sort of just like as we're trying to balance between transparency, which is obviously a thing that we talk about a lot, and safety for the people that we're working with.
And strategy.
Yeah. We also have to balance between our pipeline and like being able to control what we can control, like the flow of people who are coming in. And like, what if someone random kind of jumps in and is like, hey, I want to work with you guys. Like, how do we balance that as well so that we're not just doing the one thing and not the other? Yeah. And so this is the decision that, like, our vetting team made, their state committee made, to be like, yeah, he kind of came in from out of nowhere in the sense of, like, obviously he's been doing community stuff, but, like, he was not someone that was on our radar as, like, a candidate we're going to support in 2024 when we first started doing our recruitment back in, like, May of 2023. But it's an opportunity for us that we think we can get this out of, in terms of not just the organization, but building governing power for working the multiracial working class in Delaware. That's, like, our whole thing. And we saw, like, basically made the decision. This is part of our discussion, is, like, what do we think we can gain from this? Is it worth it? Yada, yada. All these things that we consider. Like, what? How does this build towards our attempts to build power? And enough people, a supermajority of our people, made the decision that, like, you know what? I think this is going to be helpful.
Well, folks, there it is. I think people are going to be very interested in that discussion.
I didn't get to all the things I wrote down. I guess I have to come back.
I was just going to ask you, you got the final word. You can talk about whatever you want.
We talked about this last year. The Corporate Law Council made some changes to just, like, basically help their clients. And they're trying to do it again now.
Jordan's written a bit about it, and we're following the story.
Good, yeah.
Because we know what happened last time, where stuff got jammed at the end. They tried to jam something that was really dumb, and they pulled it back, as Jordan Howell has documented. And yeah, so it should be extremely interesting what they're going to drop on you at the end of May.
For some reason, the audio cut out here about 2 minutes before we were done recording. So can just say, keep an eye on the Delaware Call if you want to see more about the corporate stories, because we are going to be following those. But otherwise, thanks everybody for listening, and left is best.